Welcome to The Lorraine Murphy Show. I'm an entrepreneur on my second business, a mentor, an author, wife to a fellow entrepreneur, and mother to a magical little girl. On my podcast, I explore topics that fascinate me that will help you unlock ideas to rise even higher in your life. Myself and my special guests will be talking entrepreneurship and how to build better businesses, organization and figuring out how to get more shit done quicker and smarter, staying in touch with our soul, and how to blend business babies with real babies. Let's jump in to this week's episode. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Lorraine Murphy Show. As always, it is wonderful to have you here with me. So this week's episode is part of my eighth season of the podcast, in which I'm focusing on one of my greatest passions, which is business. I've had my own businesses since 2012, and entrepreneurship is a pursuit I devote a ton of time, energy, and focus to, whether it's growing my own business or mentoring others in theirs. In this season, I'll be taking you behind the scenes in my business, as well as interviewing business owners I respect enormously. And this week's guest is no exception. This week, I am talking to someone who I have admired for quite a while in the business space. Revy Jane is an entrepreneur, a speaker, a writer, a mum of two gorgeous little girls, and who is also a huge advocate for mental health. She has spoken very openly about her own issues in this space. In myself and Revy's chat, we cover the early days of her fitness career and how a simple observation led her to the purpose that still drives her today. That's 9 years later. How she started her personal brand and the intentional steps she took to plant the seeds for the mega profile she has today, the curveball that ended her first business at 36 weeks pregnant and what it taught her, the realities of overwhelming demand in a business and how she's navigating it right now, her issues with self-doubt and the simple practices she uses to overcome it every single day, why we both believe it's important for entrepreneurs and for everyone to discuss self-doubt, no matter what stage of the journey we're in. The two practices that have been game changers for her in blending a rapidly growing business with a young family, and also how her experience of anxiety and PTSD have shaped her approach to business. I am so excited to bring you this week's episode. I know you're going to get so much gold out of it. So I'm going to jump straight in now. Cool. So I am very, very excited to have you on the show, Revy. Thank you so much for joining me. Particularly, we were just chatting before we started recording, and just particularly given how much is happening in your business right now. So thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
I'm really, really excited. I think there's so many different curveballs and twists and turns in your entrepreneurial journey. I think you're going to have so much to share with us. So on that, can you tell us about, it seems like your business journey has kind of swung in lots of different, not lots of different directions, but it's thrown you some curveballs and there's been different changes of direction that you've experienced over the last few years. I think you and I were just talking about the need for the word pivot, particularly in 2020. Yeah, can you tell us about your career to date, maybe doing that via the three biggest decisions that got you to where you are right now?
Sure. So I started my fitness studies and journey in about 2010. Mm-hmm. And I really connected and discovered this, you know, connection between self-respect and really valuing your body and fitness. So I saw that really deep connection within myself and found this huge drive within myself to try and share that with as many women as I possibly could. So, you know, I came from a background of having really low self-esteem, low self-worth. And when I discovered fitness, that was just kind of ignited something within me. And then I just wanted to so passionately share that with others. So got my studies in fitness, and then I started a little kind of a group class within a gym, within another gym, mm-hmm. in 2011. And I called it Urban Babes at the time. And the reason that happened was because I remember training at this gym and I was studying fitness at the time. And I literally saw women rock up in their car, take a look for no longer than 5 seconds and say, yeah, that's too intimidating for me. I'm going to get back in my car and drive away. And I would look up. Yes. And I was like, oh my, I just saw this huge gap where, you know, women were so, this is, you know, back in 2011, where it was, training and weight training, particularly in women, wasn't as known back then. Mm. I don't feel, and like we didn't have Instagram even. Almost, yeah. Like it's all kind of happened as I kind of traveled along this journey of weight training, and you know, just barbells and pull-ups. Like it was just a masculine dominated space. So I, you know, would go out to the women and say to them, like, you know, come on, I'll walk you through it. And, you know, sure enough, like we are so capable. And it was just about kind of creating a welcoming space for women to really help them realize that they're more than capable of all these things. They just need to scale it back, start at their own pace, respect their growth within the journey of fitness. And before I knew it, I had enough members to start my own studio. And then, yeah, in 2012, I started my own CrossFit affiliate. And yeah, I guess that just boomed. It was a pink gym. It was just chicks who, you know, by day they were the accountant, and then by night they were this, you know, pink barbell lifting beast. And it just created the most electrifying, empowering community.
Wow. And where was that gym, Rebby?
It was in Miami on the Gold
Coast. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I know. We lived on the Gold Coast for 4 months. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Right. And, you know, we became one of the most followed CrossFit affiliates in the world because
wow.
Niche, you know, and none of this really occurred to me at the time, but I look back and I'm like, wow, like I really hit some of the pillars that people tell you to hit as an entrepreneur. But at the time it was very much just heart-led, purpose-led, listening to intuition and doing what I loved. Like I genuinely just, I don't ever feel like the business was financially thriving or financially per se, quote unquote, successful, but I was successful in that I was waking up every day and doing what I absolutely loved. And I just lived and breathed it. And it was very fulfilling. And then in 2017, 2018, we ended up having a notification from, I should go back. So in 2013, I started realizing that I had two Instagram accounts. I had CrossFit Babes, which was a really followed account, and I was promoting, you know, our fitness journeys through that platform. Mm-hmm. And what I was finding was that there were a lot of people searching for who the person was behind the brand, behind the business. And I made this conscious decision to say, oh, I think I'm going to like put myself out there as, you know, like a trainer, or, you know, I could do this online. I just felt this, you know, pull from people that they wanted to know more about me and the person and my why. So I started sharing more consciously, like my workouts, my workout ethic, my just motivation behind all of this. And it really resonated with people. And I think there was a lot of, within my like personal friends and my circles, like, it was kind of like, what are you doing? Like, why are you posting yourself in the gym training? Like, who's watching that? Yeah. Because at the time, it just wasn't really a thing. You know, there wasn't an influencer. There wasn't that kind of, there was more like YouTube stuff, but there wasn't an Instagram thing going. So,
Whereas now it's the most normal thing in the world for someone to film their workouts. Yeah. Do you know what I find really interesting, Rebby, about when you're talking about, because I followed you for quite a while now on Insta, and I feel like I'm quite familiar with your ethos and how you operate within your community and what your community thinks of you. And I find it quite interesting that all the way back in 2011, when you were outside that gym ushering women in, it's almost like the online version of what you're doing now. It's just your mission has gotten bigger and bigger, but your purpose is still the same. It's pretty powerful.
Yeah, my purpose is absolutely still the same. And I feel really fortunate, as much as I had a very colorful and very, I had lots of life experience by the time I was even, you know, 17. I had a really wild kind of unconventional upbringing. Mm. As much as that was painful and challenging, I feel very, very fortunate to have discovered my purpose so early, because I feel like it's just kind of set me up to really understand what I want to do in my life and what my legacy is going to be, and what, you know, how I want to make people around me feel, which is, you know, seen, valued, loved, and empowered. So absolutely, I can see how my journey has been like within the gym, and then it's had a calling to go, you know, global, and I've tried to meet it there, which has been, yeah, amazing. So yeah, I moved online to like a more personal brand. And then in 2017, 2018, we had a meeting with our financial advisor at the time. And I remember him saying, like, your personal brand is funding your gym. Did you realize that? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, that's not the plan here, is it? And I was like, not really, but like, I love the gym and I love the community. And it's like, okay, well, you need to revisit that. You need to work on that kind of. And I remember just being like, well, I could never ever close the gym. Like it's my world. And then it was like our hands were forced because I was about 36 weeks pregnant with our second daughter, and I got a notification from the council, the Gold Coast Council, saying that our zoning wasn't correct. It was about a $15,000, $20,000 fix. And then not only that, the business wasn't doing very well.
The zoning just wasn't generating that kind of money to do that.
And then our landlord said, yeah, we're actually not really happy with you being here anyway. So we had this and I'm so grateful for this lesson, because at the time I just remember being so broken and heartbroken. Mm. And now the lesson was that no matter like what the universe has done, it's teaching you something. It's moving you. If there's a lesson in it, it's moving you to a better place. Trust in it, lean into it, accept it, because you know, it led me to a speaking tour and this, you know, thriving personal brand that I feel like you said, like I'm able to reach so many more people now, and fulfill my purpose on an international scale. So I feel like it absolutely happened for a reason, but at the time it was, yeah, absolutely challenging. So that kind of brings us to now. And then I went on a speaking tour in 2019, which, again, I shared my story and kind of my background and my upbringing. And it just helped me connect with my community on a face-to-face value. And honestly, like I think of it, like imagine if I try to do that in 2020, like it just.
Oh, perfect timing. So you did that last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's so cool. And so can I ask you, how did you manage it with your community? The fact that you had to close down the gym? Because I mean, imagine that would have been heartbreaking letting them know, was it?
It was awful. It was absolutely awful. We kind of teed up another gym in Burleigh in the same suburb. Yes. We had moved gyms to a bigger facility and said, you know, this is a really kind of similar training scheme. But, yeah, they kind of all parted ways. But the best thing that I have found from that community is that everyone has a friend from that community. Some of them are best friends. Like I've met some of my best friends from that community, and we all seem to have like a lifelong friend from then. And whenever we, you know, reconnect, whenever we see each other, it's like a sisterhood, and it's almost like we kind of take off where we were, and we have this like really lovely bond that we shared those moments. And yeah, it was like the golden days. Like when we look back at that, we were like, wow. And you know, it was pre-kids. We didn't have to be anywhere. Just so much fun. And yeah, I light up when I think about it and miss it. But yeah, I'm just grateful that it ever occurred.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. So can you tell me, so it sounds like there's been a lot of almost like divine flow and divine timing to your businesses so far. I'm going to say businesses, plural, because there's been a couple of different iterations of it. What are the three key things you reckon you did in those early days to set the business and also yourself up for success? Because I think we can talk about having the systems and the processes for the business, but and I know you and I will probably talk about this more in this chat. I think so much of business is mindset as well. So what are the three things you reckon you did over those early kind of formative 3 to 5 years to really set yourself up and also the business up for success?
Well, like I said, definitely saw the gap in the market when I saw how intimidated women were, and I stepped into a space that was really male dominated, and that was intimidating for me. Like I think I was like 19, 20 years old when I really kind of started establishing myself as a brand and as a business, and you're going to get pushback. Like you are going to get weird looks. You're going to have people saying not so nice things about you. Even like I said, in my own circle, like there was just people questioning what I was doing. And I think it's really important to stay true to what is lighting you up and what you see could be successful, because I feel like you punch yourself up for the rest of your days, not kind of exploring that space. And really making that conscious decision, I think, is really difficult for people to say, okay, I am a personal brand. I am going to take myself seriously. I do value my time, and putting a cost to that time. I mean, it took me so long. I think when I was establishing myself as a personal brand, which was in 2013, 2014, I can't even remember the exact timing of it. But when I started that account and changed my handle and said, okay, I'm going to make this a business, it wasn't until about 2016 that I actually started earning a steady income. So that's, you know, 3 years of building a brand, creating content every single day, sometimes 2 to 3 times per day, and not making anything of it. So if you don't love what you're posting and truly believe in it, you're not going to have the longevity. So it's so important to really believe in what you're doing, be open to receiving pushback, and to have fun while you're doing it, because I naturally loved creating content and sharing it with others. So I really think that those three things are really important to do in those early days.
Yeah, love that. Can I actually ask, I wanted to ask you a few minutes ago, but I got excited by your story, further got caught up in your story. So when you said the financial advisor said that your personal brand was financing the gym,
yes,
what revenue streams did you have coming in at that point?
So obviously collaborations as an influencer is one of the biggest ones, but I had started a training program, like an online training program. Live now. So I have like a home program, a 2.0 program. I've got a gym program. I've got a meal prep guide. And my husband's got a back to basics program on my website as well. So yeah, basically accommodating to that global space where people were wanting to get the workouts and the programming that we were having at the gym, which is mainly, dumbbell, kettlebells work with some skipping and cardio in it. And that really took off and was helping, basically create a steady passive income. I genuinely love writing programs for people and knowing that they're going to get a good hit of endorphins. So it was just a really, I guess, organic. Well, I hate to use that word because it's just so overused, but yeah. It was really an organic way to create something that the demand was there. So that was our first ever product, I suppose, through Revy Jane, apart from like the gym being a separate thing. Yeah, the Revy Jane brand created those home programs. And yeah, I'm currently writing the 3.0. So it's been something that I can do like on the side. I love doing that. But yeah, so the collaborations, which there's amazing brand opportunities as an influencer, and then there's the program. And then this year I've started more of the e-commerce side to go in hand with the programs. I have started the affirmations. So I've got a deck of affirmations. I've got some, kind of merch teas, I suppose, in the works, and they're coming before Christmas. So I've created a bit of a store, and that has been such a big learning curve because, it's been a different approach to have a huge community as an influencer, but then to have an e-commerce store kind of startup. It's been like starting at the opposite ends of things.
It makes total sense. Yeah. Well, it's almost like in the early days you were starting the business and then the community would follow, whereas now you've got the community and you're building the business within that.
Yeah, which has been really challenging in a good way, but yeah, like kind of like a tidal wave. You're like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Well, such a quality. Overwhelming.
Can we speak to that for a second, Revy? Because we chatted before. I mean, you've hinted at it online, the fact that you just can't keep these affirmation cards in stock right now. Yeah. And how have you been dealing with that? So you were saying you just cannot seem to keep, you've hired this warehouse and it's just always empty because as soon as you get stock in, it's gone again, which is, I know for many entrepreneurs, they would just be like killing for that problem. But I do think it's almost as much of a problem as evil. I almost see it when I'm working with my business mentees. I kind of see it as two ends of the spectrum. You know, one end, you're like, the phone's not ringing, there's no money coming in, and you're panicking about that. And then the other end, there's just so much work on that you don't know how you can fulfill it. And I think particularly as women then, you're hoping that you're not going to let people down, or you're worrying that they're not going to get the stock in time and so on. So it's almost like, I think as an entrepreneur, you're dancing that dance between which end of the spectrum you're going to sit on. And I think it's very rare to find that window where you're like, okay, I'm just nice now. So how have you been dealing with that massive demand?
As I always do, I'm very transparent with my situation, with my community, and I'll just kind of say it how it is. And that is, you know, sharing that I probably doubted myself a bit too much with the affirmation cards. Mental health is a space that I have touched on throughout my whole journey. So even though there's been fitness and there's been motherhood, a very constant, sharing of mine is trying to not just be in touch with my spiritual or physical health, but my mental health. Mm. So that has just been a constant topic. And so when I created these affirmation cards, I just did not factor in how many people were in my community for that purpose and for that topic to be shared. So I felt like, yeah, absolutely, I can. Yeah, feel that I was really feeling like I was letting people down. But at the same time, like, I think that there's different ways that I can still contribute to people and, trying to let them know that they're stop coming, writing free affirmations, and just being transparent with how, like, the growth and the evolvement of the business isn't how I expected it to be. Mm. So, always coming from a place of gratitude that the problem is a great problem to have, but it is a bit of an issue, and I'm going to try and work on it in the future so that you guys don't have to wait for as long. At the moment I've got a team of, three in my warehouse, and I just said to them, like, this is a limbo period, and I know that you feel like you can be kind of, what do I do next kind of thing without the stock being here. But I said, just enjoy it. Come a couple of weeks when the stock arrives, I'm going to be asking you to work late. I'm going to be asking you to be here early, and you're not going to have time to scratch your head. So enjoy these lulls, because I think as an entrepreneur, you've got to kind of learn to ride the wave. And sometimes it just feels so overwhelming. And then it just almost feels like so uncomfortable when you're a little bit quiet, when you don't have 50,000 tabs open and you're not working around the clock. You're like, oh my gosh, this is so not familiar, and I feel like I'm not doing enough. But I think as a business owner too, like, when you know that you've earned your stripes, those hours that you've pulled an all-nighter and you've, hustled really hard, and you've just got to kind of, ride the wave.
Yeah, I really like that, because I think also because I definitely identify with what you're saying. Like, I've gone very hard in my entrepreneurial journey. And it's almost when I do have those, you call it limbo, I call almost kind of like just like a dip where we're just not as busy for whatever reason. It's almost like my nervous system has adjusted to always being so busy. Mm-hmm. And when it's not, my central nervous system's like, what's going on? Why aren't we rushing around from A to B? What's happening?
And do you make yourself busy? Because I find myself doing that.
Oh, I'm very good at doing that. Yeah.
Gaps, and I'm like,
my team are like, no more ideas, please. Yes. So will you have to bring on extra staff now when it does come time, or you're going to make it work with the three staff that you have right now?
We have kind of Christmas casuals, I suppose. We've got a couple of roles in that, and then we've got pickers and packers that will come on just particularly for those launch periods.
Nice. But
at the moment we have operations manager, graphic designer, and customer relations. So definitely needing to fill the parts that I'm just not that good at. And, I totally am such a supporter and believer of delegating and finding people that are really good at their job, because I'm not necessarily, that's not a strength of mine. So
Yeah, love that. Okay, so can we touch on self-doubt? Because I know when I was chatting to you about coming on the show, it was something that I think you've been so transparent about with your community. And I know you just touched on an example there where you're almost like deliberately not ordering big quantities of the cards because you're like, no, I won't sell them. There's no way I'll sell them. Mm. And I do see self-doubt. I mean, I think men and women alike suffer from self-doubt when it comes to business. But I do think, based on the amount of work that I do with female entrepreneurs, that it's a real issue for women and women holding themselves back. And I think that self-doubt manifests in various different ways, like kind of your example there around not ordering the stock that you could actually sell. Or I see it in other ways where women deliberately keep their prices too low because they don't think that they're worth charging XYZ, and to not putting their hands up for the strategic partnership that they could go for. So there's so many different ways it manifests. Can you give us a recent example for you? Maybe not if you do have another one, maybe not of the ordering the cards example, and how you've worked through that in your business.
Yeah, I think I've been trying to think about this. I do it on a daily basis, I can tell you that.
Yeah,
same. I doubt myself a lot. And I think the reason I share it is because I think there's so many people that can look to someone like me, and I look to other entrepreneurs or women in business and think they have got it all figured out and I don't. And that's why I'm not going to succeed, that kind of narrative. And it's just such a, you know, comparison is the thief of joy story. Like, it's just, we're constantly playing this comparison game. We've been, like, as a society, we've been taught that there can only be, you know, one successor and one person, that there's only one space for a woman. Like, it's what we've been raised with. And I'm trying to break that mold and that story that so many women tell themselves. And I, you know, help a lot of my friends in business, and it's always the same kind of doubts that they have. This woman's already done it, or, you know, there's already a book out there for that, or there's already, you know, PJs for that. And it's like, well, you know, there's always going to be someone that's already doing it, but you've got something different to what it offers. So I can totally relate and know that I do it on a daily basis. I know that there's just little things I do that my staff were gobsmacked that I would even consider it. But I had, I don't know if you saw my post earlier last week.
I did. I think where you're going. I think I know what you're going to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like simple things, like my signage arrived the week that I moved in. I had signage made up for my warehouse, and I just said to myself, subconsciously, and then like I slowly become aware of that story that I was telling myself, but I was like, oh, I can't put this signage up. Like, what if this doesn't work out? You know, what if the cards flop and then I have to move out because I can't pay rent? And just a really kind of far-fetched fail story that I had in my head. And my operations manager, Ash, was like, what? Like, can we put the signage up? Like, we've had it. Our postmen can't find our warehouse because we don't have any signage. Like, what's going on? And so I started to kind of do the self-awareness like method. And I was like, what are you doing? And I realized very quickly that, yeah, I was telling myself that it wasn't going to work out. So don't put the signage up, because then you have to take it down and it's going to be, you're going to be really sad. Yeah.
But also, so, remembering you did go through that experience with your gym where you literally did have to do that. So I can imagine there would be, so to shift from having your gym, which is like a bricks and mortar location, and then going virtual as such, as in, I know you've got an office at home, you work from home, and then putting roots down again. I mean, I would imagine that would be a scary thing to go back and do again. That makes sense to me.
Because, yeah, I guess it has happened to me where I have had to shut the doors, and it was just, you know, I guess it was kind of traumatizing because I felt like a big part of me was letting a community down. So it was really hard. But I want people to know that, you know, the most successful people in their industry have doubts and do question whether that's the right decision. And if we don't, I mean, I feel like there's such a blessing in the, like I said before, the life experiences that I've had, because when I was 18 and 20 trying to create this space for myself, I'd already kind of hit rock bottom. I'd already kind of felt what it was like to fail. So I absolutely do not find failing. I don't think I define fail or failure as the same as everyone else. Like I do not believe in mistakes. I do not see them as mistakes. They are absolutely lessons. And, you know, the only thing that I would actually define as failing is giving up. That's it. Like, you can make mistakes. You can do something that wasn't actually your intention, but there's so much that you can take from every choice that you make. And it's just, yeah, it's perspective.
Yeah, I love that. So have you put the signs up now?
The signs are up.
Yes.
The signs are up. We're established.
Love it. So what are the practices you do? So you talked there about a self-awareness technique. What are the practices that you do actually undertake in order to become aware, I guess, of your own bullshit and get over it? Are there, like, what are your kind of tools that you lean on yourself to overcome it?
Well, I practice Vedic meditation. So that's a 20-minute meditation. You're meant to do it twice a day, but with two small children at home, I try.
If I nail the morning, I'm like, boom.
Yes, exactly. I said that to my meditation teacher. I'm like, I'm just going to aim for one per day at this stage until I can see a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel with, you know, nap time and sleep time and all that. But that's been one of the greatest shifts for my, you know, spiritual journey. And I think that because my business and the only way I've really ever operated is through purpose-led and through intuition, you know, I think it's so important to check in with yourself every single day. And I liken meditation to having a coffee date with a best friend or with your partner, you know, checking in with them. The most important relationship you can have is the one that you have with yourself. Mm-hmm. So if you don't take that time to check in with yourself and to say, how is this making you feel? What do you feel like is missing in your life? Do you feel like you're working too much? Do you feel like you're working too less? What's going to make you happier? What's going to make you feel more purpose-filled? You're not going to know what your business needs, what you need. So it's so important to check in with yourself every single day. And that's a bit of a non-negotiable for me, is checking in with myself. And that sometimes looks like, you know, having a conversation with myself in the car, because I've had no time to stop. I've been nonstop since, you know, 4:30 in the morning. So mm-hmm. I'm getting from A to B. I will literally talk to myself like a crazy person and say, hey, Rev, like, how are you feeling today? You know, what's going on with you? Are you feeling good? I'm feeling really grateful for today. Actually, I'm feeling really overwhelmed and stressed and tired, and I really need to schedule in some rest time. You know, that is just vital with how I operate as a businesswoman and as a mom.
Love that. So powerful. And I think you're right. Just talking about it just makes it acceptable for other people to feel it. And then I think you're right. So many people just assume because someone's got a platform or they've got a successful business or they seem to be selling lots of things or whatever's going on for that person, you just assume, well, they've got it all. Like you said, they've got it all figured out and they don't have anywhere near the issues I have. So I know I experienced that myself. I talk a lot about myself, my challenges with my mentees, and try do it in my community as well, because it is challenging. I think the more we normalize it, I think the more easily we can all overcome it, you know. So it's destigmatizing it, I think, is really, really important. So how do you actually come up with the ideas for your new products? So I know you talked about you closed the CrossFit gym and then you pretty much transitioned to offering online programs. But how do you actually come up with your ideas? Because you talked about posting two or three pieces of content a day, which I know for a lot of people would be like, holy crap, how could I even do that? Where do you get your inspo from? Like, where did the idea for the cards drop in, for the clothing that you do, the speaking tour? Well, how do you get your ideas, I guess is the question.
Well, first of all, when I was building the brand, that's when I did two to three posts per day. I cannot even imagine like doing that now. I just,
okay, you're making me feel better now. Thank you.
yeah. Now I do like one a day, if that. So, but you know, it took a long time to establish my own brand, and I don't know. Sans kids is a lot easier to create content.
Yes, agreed.
But now I'm probably the most unorganized content creator you'll come across. I'm a very sporadic, like just, it's like almost like a little bit of a journal in a very vague way.
Love that.
I basically, you know, my purpose is to make people feel less isolated, more empowered, and to share my daily struggles. And that just comes through, whether it's a motivation lull, whether it's, you know, motherhood, parenting, space, whatever I'm struggling with. I know that if I'm struggling with it, someone else is probably struggling with it too. So that's really where I kind of get very passionate about sharing a story. And I've always been like a documenter. So I've always just loved, and I over time I've realized that that's not actually ingrained in everyone. And and I look back now and, you know, it's so interesting, but during my high school days, I would, you know, document the sports field. Like I would take pictures of people playing football and playing volleyball, and I'd take pictures and then put it in a presentation and put it on like the assembly and create like a little movie.
Look at you.
So that translated into CrossFit Babes, where I would document them, and then kind of translated into my own life when people wanted it's always been like, what do you guys want to know? Like, what do you guys want to see? And if it lights me up and it makes them happy, like that's the perfect content because I'm enjoying creating it and they want to know. So, you know, there's so many times where people want me to talk about X and I'm like, that does not interest me whatsoever. But it probably lights someone else up. So maybe follow them, you know, and this is what I'm going to offer. This is what I, you know, ignites my soul. And I think that's why people see me have such a good time with it because I'm really genuinely enjoying what I'm creating. It's fun. Like I would do it in my free time.
Love that. So good. And how do you, so when it comes to the actual paid products, like the cards, for example, where did that idea come from? Was it burning a hole in your soul for the last few years? Did it just drop in the shower? Where did it come from?
The cards, affirmations has been a part of my life since I was about 18 when I saw a therapist and they, you know, introduced them to me. And my internal dialogue had always been very negative from the role models in my life or the parents in my life. Yeah. And so I hadn't really ever been kind to myself before I learned what affirmations were. And they were such a pivotal part of my transformation into someone that can actually love herself. So they'd always been there. And then I feel like the speaking tour, connecting with women on a face-to-face value, I really learned how many other people were struggling and how helpful that these affirmations could be. And I remember just, I think I was driving and I remember thinking like, I feel like I need to, you know, get like a poster or like, I just want to, it was like that burning desire to help, you know, that burning desire to help people realize that they're incredible and that they can accept themselves and that this self-love is so attainable, but I can totally relate to it not feeling like it's possible in this lifetime. Yeah. What helped me? And I just had this like moment of like affirmation cards would be incredible. And what if I, you know, I could write them. I know what the doubts are that I have. I know what, you know, what counter beliefs would be really valuable. So I tried to make them as, you know, I guess specific, but also general at the same time. So, and they've been just, and every time, you know, someone tags me in a story and, or someone texts me and says, I've just read your affirmation from the morning. And just, you know, they've been so helpful. I've had just the most heartfelt, deep, heavy messages from people. And it just makes me so like my cup is just full whenever I read those messages.
And how intimate is it, you know, to be part of someone's morning routine? I think that's so special that someone actually consults you every day. It's a way of helping them in a really intimate, I think, tangible way that you wouldn't necessarily be able to do over Instagram, for example.
I honestly feel like it's like the pat on the back that we all need, the hug that we need. And like I think about, you know, sometimes I think about my friends and I'm like, you know, when your girlfriends were going through a really difficult time, like it's like this is what they need to hear, this is what they need to read, this is what they need to feel. And I just feel so like humbled and honored to be a part of that time with them. Like I still can't believe that people would come to me for that kind of that space is just so sacred. So yeah, I feel so honored.
Yeah, love that. So I want to talk about babies for a minute. So you've also got a Lexi. Do you call her Lexi or Lex?
I call her Lex. Yeah,
Lex. You've got a Lexington, whereas Lexi is my Lexi is Alexis, which she hates.
Naturally,
I try it sometimes. She's like, "Mama, I'm not Alexis. I'm Lexi." I'm like, "Okay, then." So maybe I was just chatting to Wade yesterday. I was like, "I wonder if she'll ever actually choose to use."
Oh, she will.
I love it. I love both. I think they're really. I think there's a lovely energy to the name Lex or Lexi. I think it's cool. Sure. It's a bit cheeky as well, which Lexi is very cheeky. So I love how honest you are about that blend. I like to talk about the blend instead of the juggle because for me the juggle is just so anxiety inducing. I really love the fact that we talk about. I really talk about that blend because I think we can all blend something, whereas very few of us can actually physically juggle anything. Mm-hmm. And I loved just when you share those real world tips. So I know when I was writing my third book, Baby Remarkable, and you had that idea about creating stations around your house. So, because I think you had both girls in nappies, didn't you? Did you have them quite close together? What was the age gap?
2 years.
Okay. So you had two nappies at one point though when
Lola
was born. Yeah. So you talked about the idea of having your I think it was your pads. It was just after she was born. The yes. Both girls size nappies, some hair ties, some hair brushes, like wipes in various different stations around the house. And I just thought that was such a genius tip that I put it into the book. What have been the three biggest game changers for you? And what I mean by game changers, like tips, life systems, ideas that really help you give what you need and want to give to the business, but also need and give what you want to give to the kids as well. And to Clay, of course, your husband.
I think one of the biggest things that I've adopted is like surrendering
and accepting
that there is absolutely a myth to being able to do it all. Like that just needs to just die. It needs to be an old, you know, wives' tale of being able to do it all. That one of the most simplest things is it takes a village, and it absolutely does. Like I see them go to daycare, that those educators are contributing to everything, the whole family dynamic. Going to work and having staff, they're part of my village. Going to my friend when I'm having a breakdown, they are a part of my village. My husband is part of my village. Like everyone, it does take a village, and it's not one person doing it all. So just really learning that, because at the start I literally took motherhood as this badge of honor that I had to be and do absolutely everything for Lexi, or else I was a shithouse mother. That was just an internal pressure that nobody else was putting on me. I was putting it on myself. And so surrendering and letting go was one of the biggest ones. Delegation, I guess it's the same thing, you know, like just being okay with not being absolutely everything for your kid, and letting go of the reins. Mm-hmm. And the between moments. So what I mean by that is one of the things that I have really started to value is taking the time to change gears, shift gears. So from when I was, you know, getting the kids ready for school and then going to work, there's that moment of whether I meditate, whether I journal, whether I have that little self-chat, pep talk, I'm taking that moment to really begin the workday, and then it's even more important on the way back. So, okay, I've been at work, I've got all these tabs open, I've got XYZ on my plate, but I need to shut the day off. And that between moment, so not going, you know, directly into the car, still on a work call, and then seeing the kids, like that has always kind of blown up in my face. So really taking a moment to go, okay, am I gonna, you know, take a long route to daycare, or am I going to go for a walk by myself? Am I going to have a meditation session before I get the girls? Is so important in not just kind of being at two places at once. It just doesn't really work. And sometimes that is unavoidable when you're going through a launch week, or you're going through, a dilemma at work. It's inevitable that it clashes, because we're always mums and we're always business owners. But for the most part, whenever it is somewhat manageable, really taking the time to change the space and be where you are has been really big, and really helpful with like being gentle with myself as well, because I'm not beating myself up when I'm at work, and I'm not beating myself when I'm with the kids, because I'm there.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Love that. What did you call it, Revy? The moments between, was it?
Yeah.
So good. And I want to talk about mental health. So you have talked very openly about mental health issues, particularly around your anxiety that you've experienced over the years. And I would imagine the reason you're doing that is to normalize it for other women, so that if people are feeling that they know that they're not alone. But I was really curious. So I know I've experienced over the last couple of years, I experienced depression last year when we had two miscarriages, and there was a lot of other stuff going on. And I was quite depressed for a few months, and had to work through that with the help of a psychologist and my husband and family and friends as well. And I know that it's really shaped my approach to business, having been through that experience. How do you feel that your experience with anxiety or other mental health issues, do you feel like it has changed how you would do business otherwise, or shaped your approach to it?
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean,
really?
Yes. Like I live with it. So, you know, I I'm a very self-aware person because I've had to be, but I've lived with, it's not something that's come on in my late 20s or whatever. It's something that I've, you know, had to learn and had to do my research and get as much help professionally as I possibly can. So my anxiety basically is, if she was a different person, she would be the most risk adverse, most, worst case scenario person. So, and I've started to realize in the past maybe 3 years, I often get really tired. Like I get very, very worn out and exhausted. And I've started to realize that that is because, my anxiety, if I was to go for an hour at work, a normal person would probably have, you know, 20 thoughts go through their head in the hour where it's like decision making. Whereas when I go to work for an hour and there's a decision to be made, I've gone through 1,000 thoughts of what could possibly go wrong. And it's I've got post-traumatic stress. So I've got a disorder where I'm always I can be easily triggered when something just relates or makes me almost feel like a situation could be similar to that. Or yeah, I'm always kind of risk assessing. So it's exhausting. And so when I would get tired and I would, you know, kind of beat myself up, which is just such a vicious cycle because you're already tired and then you feel shame and like you're not good enough because you get so tired and you relate all this stuff to, oh, like now it's my anxiety winning again. So I would just burn out like weekly. When I finished my speaking tour, I attained adrenal fatigue. Mm-hmm. I was bedridden and absolutely useless to my family.
Oh, my dear.
And so I think, you know, living with it, it's created, I'm a very, very empathetic person anyways, but I think that I can just relate to so many people who have a mental illness. And so it's changed the way that I push myself. I'm a lot kinder to myself. I think I adopted the whole hustle hard, like Gary Vee.
Yes.
You know, if you're not working 100 hours a week, you're not trying hard enough.
Yeah. Which is, I hear you.
You know, an absolute BS. Like there are times that you do have to pull your finger out and absolutely work yourself hard, but that's not, you know, that's not a long-term good business method.
Yeah.
We're not robots. And as mums, we are on all the time anyways.
Yeah, agreed. So
having living with PTSD and anxiety has made me realize how to nurture myself and be empathetic with myself like I would anyone else. Motherhood has taught me that too. So when I look at my kids and I can see them trying to do their best, there's so much power in seeing that and to really know that there's an inner child in us trying to do their best. And that's really what we're all trying to do, is just doing our best. And it's so important to hold space for that, to rest when we recognize that we're doing too much, and that when, you know, these mental health challenges are not to be, you know, pushed out the way. This is, it's holistic. We need to view it as a whole. And I speak about this to my employees, you know, if you're not feeling well, and this doesn't just mean you have a cold or, you know, you've broken something. It's, your mental health is just as important, if not more important, than anything that's physical. So honor that. That's like one of my biggest, working values, I guess, now, is really honoring our mental health, because if we don't honor that, like it's just going to come crashing down. So it's absolutely changed the way that I operate.
Yeah. Love that. Thank you so much. Now, I want to ask you some quick fire advice, please. As an entrepreneurial veteran, what's the one thing you would say to someone who's about to start their business?
Don't play the comparison game. And
yes,
if you are having fun doing it, then keep doing it. And don't look at your numbers. Don't look at the stats. Just keep kind of going and do what lights you up, because it will light others up too.
Yeah, and that's where the business grows from. Love that. Thank you. And what would you say to someone who's seeking to scale their business? So they've reached that, I think what you were saying is like get to a certain point before you start to think about the numbers and the stats. So once it's working, you've got a viable business, it's going well, you're still enjoying it. What would you say to someone who's ready to grow it?
I'd say feel the fear and then do it anyway.
Because yeah, love.
Punch yourself if you don't.
Yeah, so good. And I think it goes back to those self-doubt practices, you know, the almost like the toolkit that you touched on there for dealing with that self-doubt. I think that's so helpful as well. Yeah. What would you say to someone who's decided it's time to sell their business? I know you haven't had this experience yourself, but I'm not sure if you've had friends who've sold businesses or not.
I don't have any experience in this because I guess as a personal brand, it's not really something that I can
see happening. You're stuck with your brand.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what I would say.
That's totally fine. Don't worry. I would say to, I mean, this is the biggest thing I say to mentees who are planning on selling the business. I've sold my business. It's just to clean up the numbers. So any of those little personal transactions that you put through that you expect, I mean, not being dodgy, but you just put them through and then they're accounted for at the end of the month, just to clean all of that up because you just want your numbers to reflect what the business is actually doing rather than, actually, no, I put 2000 in here for rent and so on.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So yeah, you can have that one for free. And all of this said, so we've talked, I mean, we've covered so many different areas when it comes to business in this chat. What's the biggest thing that being in business has taught you over the years?
The biggest thing, again, do something that is purpose-led, because if you can wake up and fulfill your purpose and monetize off it, then it's going to be there in the long run. And also just to not question, you know, not to believe in the questions or the self-sabotaging voice inside your head, because, you know, for example, I'm not qualified in business. I don't have any marketing qualifications, but I know that I'm one of the leading Australian marketers in my industry in Australia. So like it's so important to know that you don't need to fit the mold or the business mold to be an entrepreneur. I know that I'm a natural born entrepreneur and a leader, and what I once thought was kind of like not so great personality traits as being bossy or being headstrong or really driven, especially as a female, like we're taught to be small, is now such a huge contribution to why I am successful and to why I am where I am, because without those kind of qualities, I definitely wouldn't be able to run my own business.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Ravi, for just being so open and sharing with us. This has just been, you've been incredible. Is there anything else you feel like you would like to share with my audience?
No, I hope you
feel we've missed?
No, I hope that was enough, and I hope you, enjoyed the chat and got something from it.
I did. Well, I did, and I know my audience will as well. So thank you so much for taking the time. That was awesome.
Okay, thank you,
Lorraine.
Thank
you. Bye. I so hope you enjoyed myself and Revy's chat. Isn't she just a gem? If you'd like to find out more about Revy, you can follow her on Instagram at Revy, R-E-V-I-E, Jane, or you can visit her website, which is revyjane.com. And keep an eye on my Insta over the next week for a really cool giveaway that Revy has very generously arranged for my beautiful audience. So until next week, I will chat to you then. Thank you for being part of this week's episode. It was remarkable to have you. I am always keen to hear your thoughts, questions, ideas, and suggestions for future topics for the podcast. So please get in touch on Instagram. My handle is at Lorraine Remarks, and through my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au. If you're enjoying what I'm putting out here, please do rate, review, or subscribe to the podcast so more people can find out about it and we can build this special community. Or even better, do all three. Chat to you next week.